butter on the or margarine on the matzahs, just plain matzah, that's all. What are they worried about? They're worried that maybe when they made this matzah, that they wasn't kneaded well, and there's actually some dough, some flour which is in the mix that was not mixed with water at the time when they made the matzah. And then when they put it into the oven, this flour was never mixed with any water. And if it wasn't mixed with any water, it didn't really become matzah, it's just flour. And then later, if this flour touched water, it could become hummus. That's what they're worried about. Even though it's not really such a big cause of concern, now I'm saying the reason that you don't care about gebraks, because if you are thin matzahs, even if it wasn't mixed with water, if you take flour and you put it into the oven, it can't become hummus anymore. Even if it was never mixed with water. So it's not really such a problem, but there are a lot of people who are machmer. Most people who don't eat gebraks on Pesach do eat gebraks on the last day of Pesach. They eat on the last day. The Yidden Eretz Yisrael, a machmer, even on the last day, they don't eat Pesach. They don't gebraks. And the reason for that is because the last day of Pesach is only midrabanan. Because the Torah says there's 7 days, Shivas Yomim Se'olei Masu V'Teichem, 7 days is Pesach. We keep an extra day because in Chutz La'aretz, because of Sveika D'Yoma. The last day, which is only Rabbanon, so we're not as machme as if it would be Men HaTorah. But in Eretz Yisrael, there is no eighth day. So the last day of Pesach is Men HaTorah, so it doesn't make any difference whether it's the last day or not the last day, it is going to be the same thing. But here, they're Mekel. The problem is that this year, and this hasn't happened for 14 years, that the last day of Pesach is going to be a Shabbos. So what if it's going to be a Shabbos? So you can't eat gebraks on if the last day is a Shabbos. The problem is, how do you make this gebraks? When are you going to make it? It is true, we're going to make an Erev Tashilin before the last days of Pesach, so that you can cook on Friday for Shabbos. But you can't make any gebraks, because gebraks is like chametz for the people who are machmer. So they can't prepare anything on Friday for Shabbos, because on Friday it's all going to be treif. So this is a problem. So I said, for 14 years we haven't had the problem, because it's not so usual that the first day of Pesach is going to be a Shabbos. The first day of Pesach is Shabbos, and then the last day of Pesach is a Shabbos. There's something else which is unusual, that the Tainus Bechorim is going to be on a Friday. Even though in some of the calendars they have it on Thursday, it's a mistake. Friday is Tainus Bechorim, you're going to make the Siyum, if people go to a Siyum, that's going to be on Friday. And the only time it is possible for a fast day to be on a Friday is only Asar B'Tevis or Tainus Bechorim. That's the only time it's possible. Every other fast day can never fall on a Friday, according to the way our calendar is set up. Yom Kippur can never fall on a Friday. And Tisha B'Av cannot fall on a Friday. And nor can Shavuos B'Tammuz, Tisha B'Av and Asar B'Tammuz always fall on the same day of the week. And Tainus Esther doesn't fall on Friday, because Purim can't fall on Shabbos. None of the Tanesim, except for Asar B'Tevis, at some Gedalia can't fall on Friday. Okay. That said, there is maybe a way out. There is a refrigerator. It's called Timo, which is a special type of refrigerator that heats up the food so that you can eat it warm. There's a problem. The problem is, how can you have hot chicken on Shabbos by day? How do you do that? You can have hot meat. You can leave it on the fire overnight. It's fine. But chicken, if you leave it on the fire overnight, by the time you get in the morning, it will dried up or burnt, and you can't do it. So if you're going to eat chicken on Shabbos, it's going to be cold chicken. But there is a way I can eat warm chicken, and that is you put it in this Timo refrigerator, which you set it before Shabbos, that it's a refrigerator until 10 o'clock in the morning, and then after 10 o'clock in the morning, it changes into an oven and starts cooking up your chicken, so that it comes 11:30 and you're ready for the chicken, you can have hot chicken on Shabbos. So the possibility is that you could use one of these Timo refrigerators. And by the way, the caterers like to use this kind of refrigerator, because that way they can serve hot food without having it overcooked, without having it, some things don't taste good if you cook it too long. So they know about this. And it's all set from before Shabbos. Now, even though you have it all set from before Shabbos, you have to realize that none of the halachas, the din of Shabbos, are allowed to be violated. You don't have to do anything on Shabbos. You don't do anything on Shabbos. It's all automatic. You put it into the refrigerator, Erev Shabbos, you set the dials when you want it to go into, if it could come hot, what the heat is, but you have to put it on a blech. You can't, because even on your own, when you put something in your house, you have to put a blech on the stove. Even though you're not doing anything on Shabbos, it just sits there from before Shabbos, you need a blech. So you need the blech, you can work that out, you can put it on a blech, cover the controls, you can do that all from before Shabbos, and everything goes automatic. Now, there's a way how it is possible to make the gebrachts on Shabbos without doing anything in this kind of an oven. You can't make the matzah balls before Shabbos. Matzah balls are gebracht. But you can have it ready, all the matzah meal ready in the refrigerator, that it will turn over on Shabbos morning and go into the soup and become gebracht on Shabbos. So today we're really holding on a different madrega completely from what it used to be in former times, 14 years ago. When it was the last time this happened, it was not available. It is available this time, and so you don't have to feel inhibited because you're a Yid that you can't have your gebrachts on last day. I'm going to tell you a story. I personally am not makbid about gebrachts, because my father and my parents were not makbid, and my grandparents weren't makbid, and my great-grandparents were makbid, so I'm not going to come along and all start a new religion myself. I'm not that type of a person. I married into a family that my in-laws ate gebrachts, and their parents ate gebrachts, and their great parents ate gebrachts. It was no problem. It was a great show. I ate gebrachts, and my wife ate gebrachts, so there were no problems. The thing was always like this. My in-laws, very nice people. They had five daughters. So someone married the first, I married the youngest daughter. The one who married the oldest daughter was, he didn't eat gebrachts. So the custom is that for the first yontif you go to the wife's parents. So they invited the daughter with the husband, of course, for Pesach. So the husband said, no, he can't come. Why can't he come? Because he doesn't eat gebrachts. And they do eat gebrachts. So my in-laws, the nice people that they are, said, okay, if that's the problem, we won't eat gebrachts to accommodate you. So they didn't. They changed over to not eating gebrachts. So the second daughter got married, they didn't eat gebrachts. The third daughter got married, they didn't eat gebrachts. The fourth daughter got married. I married the fifth daughter. So they invited me for Pesach. I said, I can't eat by you. says, why not? I said, because you don't eat gebrachts. So they said, the nice people that they are, they said, all right, we'll eat gebrachts. Because, I mean, the others didn't come anymore because they already had big families. So that was their minig, that they ate gebrachts. So they had no problem for going back to eating gebrachts. it's not just a this. The Chacham Tzvi says it's a mitzvah to eat kabros. It's not that it's you're allowed to eat kabros. He said if you don't eat kabros on Yontif, you have not fulfilled the mitzvah of Simchas Yontif, of being happy on Yontif. That's what he says. So you must eat kabros. So I'm not trying to convince anyone who does eat kabros not to eat kabros, or who does not eat kabros says yes, eat kabros. Everyone should stay within a minute. But I'm just saying that if you do eat kabros, there is a way how to do it this time, even though that the it falls on a Shabbos. Okay, I want to say a little bit about quinoa. I'll speak a little bit about quinoa. Quinoa is a grain which is not one of the five types of grain which will which makes chametz. Well, that's what we thought. We weren't sure. It was a new thing. It grows in South America in the Andes Mountains, and we weren't sure, is this something you can use on Pesach or not? One question was, is it a grain that could become chametz? And the second question is it if it's not a grain, maybe it's kidneys. We don't know. So there's someone from Baltimore who's going to Eretz Yisrael, and we said, ask Rabbi Yishai Blau. He works for the Eidah Haredis. He's a big Talmud Chacham and is a knowledgeable person in a lot of other things, agriculture included. And to ask him if it is chametz, if it could become chametz, or if it's kidneys. So you took the bag with the quinoa, and he brought it to Rabbi Blau, and Rabbi Blau said, I'm very busy now, leave it here, and come back tomorrow, I'll have an answer for you. So he left it with him, comes back tomorrow, he wasn't there, Rabbi Blau, but the package was there with a note attached to it, and the note said, it will not become chametz, and it's not kidneys. Okay, very good. So he came back, and he told us that this were about Pascha, and we were very happy about it. We announced it to the whole world. The Rabbi Blau said that it's okay and you could use it on Pesach. Just gives you another thing that you could eat on Pesach, even though I remember the days when all you ate on Pesach was eggs and potatoes and matzah and meat. That was all. That was it. There were no soda you could use, and there was no, there was nothing. There was nothing. All the foods today, there's nothing you can't get. It shouldn't be kosher Pesach. But okay, so we have got, instead of grain, we have quinoa. So someone from England called up Rabbi Blau and he said, is it true that you said that you could use quinoa on Pesach? How could you say something like that? So Rabbi Blau said, look, I think you can use it, but if it's causing such a ruckus and such a problem, don't get me involved with it. So anyone called after that, he said, I have nothing to do with it. I don't want to get involved. So we didn't know at that time. We thought he changed his mind. Or he didn't go. We didn't know what. So the same person who went to him the first time went to him the second time with a note. He had the note still. Kept the note. And he said, he asked Rabbi Blau, can you use quinoa on Pesach? I don't have anything to do with it. So he showed him the note that he had written, that said it was okay. So he said, my sister wrote, this is my sister's handwriting, but she wouldn't have written that unless I told her to write that. He said, so it's true that I said that, but I decided that I don't want to get involved with it. So at this point, we were a little bit stuck. Like we can't quote Rabbi Blau anymore because he didn't want to get involved with it. So what do you do now? So I said, we'll decide ourselves. So I took three plates and I bought regular flour, wheat flour, and I bought kamut. I don't know if you know what kamut is. Kamut is a supposedly an ancient Egyptian wheat and quinoa flour, same measurements. Mixed it with the same amount of water. And we made a dough out of all of them. And waited 18 minutes to see what's going to happen. 18 minutes is the time that it takes to melt from us. Guess what? Nothing happened. It was all the same. Nothing rose. No, dough's not going to rise. Don't put yeast in it. It was just dough. By the end of the day, nothing happened. Exactly. It was just the same way we made it. 3 days later, and they had to keep it moist so it shouldn't dry out. 3 days later, at room temperature, the wheat flour rose significantly. The kamut rose somewhat, but the quinoa was like pudding. Didn't rise at all. So now, seeing is believing. You see that it doesn't become hummus. Okay, so then we said in our own name, and we didn't back down. We said, it's not hummus. I had never saw how it grows, but when I saw how it grows, I was doubly convinced that it doesn't become hummus. It grows on a bush, about this high, a 4 feet high bush. It's not like grain. Grain grows like stalks from the ground. It's like grass, if you let it grow. Wheat is a type of grass. It's in the grass family. So it was a completely different animal. It's completely different. So it is not hummus, but maybe it's kidneys. Oh, first of all, kidneys doesn't grow on trees. Even before that, we don't make up our own kidneys. Because if we would make our own kidneys, the first thing we would make kidneys is potatoes. Because kidneys, anything that's similar to grain, is the Ge'enim were Masakin, for those who accepted the Chumrah of kidneys, on top of the Sradim, is because it's either similar to grain or grows together with grain. Well, this doesn't grow together with grain, and we don't make our own kidneys. As I said, we would make, if there's anything that's like grain, all the potato starch is what you make all the pesnika cakes from. So if they didn't make it at that time, the guy who lived about 1,000 years ago, if they didn't make it kidneys, we're not going to make new kidneys today. Okay, so that's the story with the quinoa. However, now here, this is the catch where you have to be so careful about. That we were once, I'm involved in kashrus in Baltimore, so we were once looking into pepper. Not the green peppers and the red peppers. I'm talking about the pepper, the spice pepper. So we wanted to know if it was kosher Pesach. We went and checked it out. It came from South America. It was made in Ceylon and was packaged in South America. We went and checked it out. Sometimes they pour alcohol on the pepper so it shouldn't get moldy. But the biggest problem we had was that the place that packaged the pepper into the small packages, the retail packages, was in a building. A building like this. It was the rented building. The front of the building was rented to someone else, and the back of the building was where they made this pepper. It was a big warehouse. The problem was that the pepper came in big sacks, like 100-pound sacks of pepper. And the workers, when they unloaded it, they had to go through the front of the building to go to the back of the building. Now, the front of the building was a bakery. And they schlepped it along the floor, and by the time they got into the place, the sack was full of flour. That was on the floor of the bakery. So you never know what's going on, unless if there's the action of a Pesach, means that they've checked it out to make sure that this doesn't happen. Now, we were in the Andes Mountains, and we saw how this works over here. There's no hummus at all in the quinoa. Quinoa is not hummus, and it's not kidneys. It's not the problem. The problem is that a lot of these of the quinoa is grown by small farmers, and they can't afford to package it themselves. And they take it to a co-op place, which they all have, let's say, 25 farmers. They each one has a few acres, and they harvest their quinoa, and they send it to this co-op, and there they package it. Each one gets paid according to how much he brought in. The problem is that these farmers, what kind of sacks do they put this quinoa into? They don't put it into new sacks. They use sacks. And we found that sometimes they use sacks that were used for flour. They save the sacks and they put it in. So we We're very upset about it. But there is one that we actually were there, and you may be able to get it over here. It's called Ancient Harvest brand, Ancient Harvest. But the lot number is only this lot number we were there for. 030114K. That was the lot number which, well, this lot number was a lot of, it was a lot of Kindler. I don't know if you can get it over here in LA. We can get it over, we can get it in Baltimore and in New York and get it. Hopefully you can get it over here also. That, you can know, it has a Hersher, has a Star K on it. It doesn't have to be a Star K. Anyone's giving a Hersher on it for Pesach means that they've checked this out and that there hasn't been any problem. Okay, now I want to speak a little bit about Jewies. Okay, now I see by the expression on your face says that you might not know what Jewies is. Okay, so I'll explain what Jewies is. Of course, you know, if you're over 35, you wouldn't know what Jewies is. You have to be younger, because it's a new thing. It's a new thing which they have invented to drink your coffee with. It looks like a stainless steel capsule. And you take two of them, and when you want to drink your coffee, you brew the coffee, you put two Jewies into the mug, and what these Jewies do is that the most people like their coffee at 140 degrees Fahrenheit. They don't want it at 190, much too hot. You take one sip and you can burn your tongue and the esophagus and the stomach all together one shot. The most people like it at 140 degrees. These Jewies, they absorb the heat till it goes down to 140 degrees. And then, if you are doing some work while drinking your coffee, you don't drink it all for one shot. So after a while, it's going to get beneath 140 degrees. When it gets beneath 140 degrees, these Jewies release the heat, which they have absorbed, and keep it at 140 degrees. It's not cool, it's warm. Okay. All right. Now, the question is, are these Jewies kosher, and are they kosher or Pesach? They're two separate questions. The answer to this question is very difficult to be sure of what we're talking about, because this is a patented invention, and they will not release the secret of what's in it. Now, we have some ideas what's in it, but it could be something which is treif. We know something about this whole concept of what's in it, how it absorbs the heat, how it lets out the heat. So it's not a new phenomenon that there are certain compounds that will absorb heat and will release heat. But exactly what it's made from, they could be made from treifas, and they could be kosher. They say it is 100% vegetable. Everything is vegetable. It is possible that it's true. But the question is, if we can rely on what they're saying, even if they are saying the truth, it's so common that they really don't really know what they're talking about. I'll tell you an example. I was in the McNeil factory maybe 40 years ago. They make Tylenol. It's a fancy word for acetaminophen. At that time, they were the ones who had the patent on it, and they were the only ones who could make Tylenol. Today, the patent's worn off after 17 years. Now anyone can make acetaminophen. It doesn't make any difference what the brand name is of acetaminophen, it's all the same, just like aspirin. aspirin, doesn't make any difference who the what brand name it is, it's all the same. It's all made in China. There's absolutely no aspirin made in the United States anymore. And that's why it's so hard to find out definite information about Pesach, about these aspirins. Now, I have aspirins that have an expiration date from 1963, which were kosher Pesach. They made a kosher Pesach. They used to make it in the United States. I still use them. But I have they don't expire, really. But I have aspirins that are kosher Pesach before they had expiration dates, long before 1963. And I use them, too. So, no, they take away the headache. Okay, so I was in this Tylenol company, McNeil is the one that made it, and I asked them, they had a liquid Tylenol, which they had, which had alcohol, we assumed it had alcohol in it, because it had a flavor. Now, flavors in general are made in alcohol. They're put into alcohol. So if you have McCormick's flavor, almond flavor, whatever it is, you'll see on the ingredients that there's 35% alcohol in it. Why is there alcohol in a flavor? Because alcohol is an ingredient that will mix with both oil and with water. Oil and water don't mix. But when you're using a flavor, you want it to mix, you want to put into a cake that you make it with water, or you make it with or with oil, or with margarine, or whatever else you could put in there. You want the flavor to mix. So therefore, they put it into alcohol, because alcohol will mix with both of them. So they had this flavor, and we asked them, alcohol can be made from petroleum, it can be made from vegetable sources, and it can be made from, it could be made from animal sources. If it's from vegetable sources, it would be a problem for Pesach, because maybe it's from kidneys. Or from chametz. If it's from animal sources, so then it's a shalav treifas. If it's in petroleum, delicious petroleum, no problem whatsoever as far as kashrus goes. Chemically, it's all the same. Now, the question was like this. I asked them, what kind of alcohol do you use? What's the source of your alcohol? They said, we don't know. So we went over to the barrel, that big barrel, this of alcohol, and sat on that Shell Oil Company. That was on top of the barrel of alcohol. So we assumed it was made from petroleum because it's a Shell Oil Company. Even though that now, thinking back, it was not such a great proof, because Shell Oil has divisions of alcohol, and they could buy the alcohol from wherever it's cheaper. They don't necessarily produce it themselves. But at that time, we assumed that they're producing it themselves. But what I'm saying is, they didn't know. They go and they order alcohol from the distributor, from an alcohol company. How they don't know necessarily where it's from. So it's not necessarily, even if they say that it's all vegetable, it's not necessarily so. They might not know. I know my wife, Shubi Guzant, she wrote to the Bounty paper company and asked them if there is any animal derivative in their paper towels, because it does not have an OU. It used to have an OU a long time ago, but it doesn't have, and then all of a sudden the OU took it off. So they said there is a small amount of animal derivative in the paper towels. That's what they told her. So, and that's probably why the OU took off the Hechsher from it when they decided to do that. So, I mean, it's good to know if you use pretty latkes on paper towel, on Bounty paper towels. And there are ingredients in paper. Did you ever buy the kosher Pesach paper towels? Chaloshes. They don't work. They don't absorb any water. Why? Because of the kosher Pesach. Okay, so getting back to these Jews, they say that it's all a vegetable, So you, we believe a company if they say something, because we say, well, you go send us the lab and get it tested, and you can see if it's true or not. But this is something which is such a secret that evidently was not so simple to test it, just to copy it, so that maybe they can change it a little bit and get a different patent and do it. But they were not successful in finding out exactly what it is. So for Pesach, even if it's all vegetable, it doesn't make it kosher Pesach. I would say it's not a case of a woman whose husband all of a sudden is missing and already he hasn't been heard of for 5 years that she can't remarry. She doesn't know what happened to him. Maybe he's alive, so how can she remarry? We don't know he's dead just because we haven't heard about him. So that's a guna situation. The woman is tied, never poor, this poor woman, and she can't remarry. So you've got to try to find any heter that you can to get her, to help her get remarried. You won't have Julies for Pesach. You know, the world won't come to an end. We've existed already for 5,000 years without any Julies, and Baruch Hashem, we are a kind of Pasuk of Chaim Kol Chem Hayayim, that we're still alive. So we'll live without these Julies. So but even during the year, I don't think that until we find out exactly what's in it, I don't think the person should use it until we know for sure that it's kosher. It's very important to be medagdic in everything that we eat to make sure that it's 100%. Okay, there are things that we could talk about, but I really am in the hands of Rabbi Cohen, and he has already scheduled me somewhere else. And so I want to wish you all a kosher Pesach, and thank you very much for coming to listen to me. Thank you.
Just one moment before, can I take some rabbinical law? The president of the Jews is Kramer, Mrs. Carlton, because she asked Rabbi Hyman, I think it applies to many women. It's
okay.
A very important Shiloh.
Okay.
But you have to make it quick, Mrs. Kramer.
Okay, you can ask me a question, but I don't know if I'll know the answer. What's the name of it?
Caesar stone. It is made in Caesarea on a kibbutz, and it's used for countertops.
Okay.
And it's because it's 93% silica and 7%
glue.
Other organizations say that they rely on the fact that it's the majority stone, and so they say that it can be kosher. So I did an experiment like you with the pomades. I'm a potter, and I fire dishes for people, and I
dishes,
but if by doing
it,
I have a kiln. I heat them up, and I've noticed from heating up people's dishes that you can actually smell food coming out of it.
That's true.
And if you stop,
even though it looks white,
right,
but it'll come out. The coffee will come out.
Right.
You can actually
so
see
if you,
it.
If you stop the kiln where the coffee comes out, it looks like this. In a mug that was clean, and this is, I could fire it hotter and make it come out. So I took a piece of Caesar stone, I took a piece of granite, and I put coffee and grape juice, which are two things that really come out and stain, and I let them dry completely for 24 hours, and then I washed it off completely, and the cup, my tester cup, and then I put it in the kiln and fired it to where I saw the coffee coming out, and I stopped the kiln, and the Caesar stone is clean, and the granite is stained. So.
And the granite is what?
Stained.
Okay.
So the granite is absorbent. Okay. Even though it looks clean, the coffee is there.
All right, so I'll say the following. There's a big difference if it goes in with heat or it goes in without heat. When you, in your experiment, when you put it on the Caesar stone, you put it with heat?
I put them both on that they were hot coffee but cold drink, that I let it dry. And then I washed it off.
Okay. The fact that it stains is a sign that it, something goes into it. But the question, we're not disputing that. The question is, will it come out when you, with a hot water method? That's the question.
I can do another experiment and do the boiling water method and then put it in the kiln and see.
Yes. In other words, if it's cooked in, it'll go in. It'll go into stone also. Granite is a type of stone. It'll go in. The question is, if you now, you put it into hot water, boiling hot water, will it come out or not? So the Torah says, "Ukli cheres asher tavush al bo yishaver." You have earthenware; it'll never come out completely. Some will come out, but it'll never completely come out. So therefore, you have to break it and throw it away. So that is the question over here. Will it come out? I'm sure that it goes in. Both of them will go in. Even the Caesar stone will go in. Question is, will it come out? So the fact that it's completely clean does not show that it'll come out. Actually, when you're putting fire doesn't come out. With hot water, it'll come out. With a fire, it gets burnt in place, and we just don't have any definite ruling on glue. If you make a vessel complete out of glue, will it absorb and will it come out or not? We have to be worried that maybe it will not come out. Like plastic. Plastic will not come out completely. We see that. If you take a Melmac plate and you eat fish on it or get coffee stains on it, you can't just wash it off like you can on a china plate. It gets stained. You have to use bleach on it. Maybe it'll come out. It really gets absorbed into it. And the smell of fish will stay on that unless you've got to also use... You can't just wash it off. It'll still smell of fish. It gets absorbed into it. The question is, will it come out with hot water method? That's really the issue. And so that, really, we haven't proved that it'll come out or not. You may have shown that it's not so likely to absorb it, but if it did absorb it, it will come out. That's a different issue. Okay, thank you.
Thank you for coming. We all know that because of the Rav Shimon is also on day all day long. Came to hear, to share this with the favor of Yad Vashem. We ask everyone to help the session hands and help Yad Vashem where you can. And everyone here to take care of us. We have to discuss it over here. Session to see you at 8:30 in Hanukkah. Thanks for hearing that.
And if anybody doesn't, if anybody can't give a check now, make a check out Yad Vashem. You give it to me later, tomorrow, day after.
Yeah, I'm sure.